Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ultimately, I'm confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress.
Well, we should soon find out if the president's confidence expressed after the oral arguments back in the spring will be validated. We will soon know. The Supreme Court ruling on the Obama health care law should be released any minute now. The case is officially known as NFIB versus Sebelius. The NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, is a conservative lobby group for small business owners. Kathleen Sebelius is President Obama's Health and Human Services Secretary. So it's NFIB versus Sebelius. They did just issue another ruling, by the way, which is kind of interesting in its own right. United States versus Alvarez. This is a First Amendment case. Can the government make it a crime to lie about medals or other military honors you receive? Or is that lying morally wrong, but protected speech under the First Amendment? You know, except for perjury, which is under oath, lying is usually not a crime. Otherwise, all the politicians would be in jail, and who'd make the laws? So sure enough, the Supreme Court has just ruled that they cannot criminalize lying about your medals or other military honors, so upholding the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So back to health care. Officially, there are four constitutional questions in play. Can the court rule at all on the health care law? They could take themselves out of the equation for this year if they rule that the fine for not buying insurance under the individual mandate is a tax. A tax, not a fine. The court can't rule on taxes until someone actually pays them, which hasn't happened yet under this law. Or they could rule it is a fine, in which case they may rule. A tax or a fine? How many angels can dance on the head of a pin? Both sides, by the way, urge the court to just do it. They agree on that much. And everybody's expecting that the court will rule one way or another. Second question, is the individual mandate allowed under the Commerce Clause, the taxing clause, or the necessary and proper clause of the Constitution? Is the mandate allowed? Number three, does the expansion of Medicaid under the law violate states' rights under the 10th Amendment? The law would expand Medicaid to cover families of four with up to about $30,000 of income, or 33% over the poverty line. Now, 26 states filed suit arguing that that would illegally transform Medicaid from a federal-state partnership to a federal imposition that states would have to partly pay for. And we now have our headline. Wow, I am shocked. The Supreme Court has upheld the individual mandate. Again, this just in, the Supreme Court has upheld the individual mandate. It survives by first impression here on the basis that it is a tax, and the federal government has the power to impose taxes. Joining me now are two guests, Michael Sperrer, chair of the Health Policy and Management Department at Columbia University, and the Takeaways Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick on the steps of the Supreme Court. Professor Sperrer, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Todd Zwillick, has the news filtered down to the steps yet?
Hi, Brian. Word is just filtered down. As you were doing your intro, journalists were running, and I mean running, full tilt across the marble plaza in front of the Supreme Court towards their stakeout stand for the television networks and others waiting here who are standing feet from me. I'm yelling at them as they go by to find out what the deal is, and then I heard you report it from the wire. A cheer went up from certain sectors of the crowd, as you can imagine. Word has not filtered back to the couple of hundred, if not over 1,000 people who were standing behind the network cameras onto the sidewalk and across the street onto the Senate grounds. They seem to have not heard yet because they're all just kind of staring over in this direction expectantly. But people in the front have heard, and journalists have heard, and they're starting to mill around. And as you can probably hear behind me, the megaphone volume has gone up, but word is starting to cascade through the crowd here on the steps of the Supreme Court on this most consequential decision, Brian,
now,
probably the last 60 years.
Professor Sperrer, here's a little bit more from the Associated Press. And listeners, I don't want to jump the gun on this. This is going to come out almost line by line. And so we don't want to overinterpret this based on the first words that we're hearing. However, the Associated Press reports it this way. The Supreme Court has upheld the individual insurance requirement at the heart of President Barack Obama's health care overhaul. The court handed Obama a campaign season victory, says the AP, in rejecting arguments that Congress went too far in requiring most Americans to have health insurance or pay a penalty. Professor Sperrer, your reaction.
Wow. You know, as you said, this is an extraordinary decision. I think it's one that's the right decision on the merits. There were coming into today three kinds of issues we were prepared to follow, three kind of stories we were prepared to follow. First was a legal story. You know, as you said, when this law was first passed in March of 2010, well over 90% of the nation's constitutional law professors thought, slam dunk, the law is constitutional, not a problem. Over time, though, month by month, day by day, week by week, confidence that the law would be upheld has been fading. Oral argument raised all sorts of concerns and all sorts of issues for advocates who supported the law. So much so that by this morning, you know, Intrade and other bettors were saying, good chance the law will be overturned. Clearly, though, on a legal matter, on a political matter, and on a health care matter, I think a victory for supporters of the law and victory for President Obama.
We're getting some more information. The Medicaid provision is limited but not invalidated. And we will find out more about what that means, limited but not invalidated, this expansion of Medicaid under the law, and whether that is the federal government violating the sovereignty of the states in so doing. We're also getting word, Todd Zwillick, that Chief Justice Roberts joined the left of the court in affirming this decision. Now, I'm not seeing one way or the other yet whether Justice Kennedy, who was considered the swing vote, joined the left of the court. So I don't know yet whether it's 5-4 or 6-3. Are you hearing anything there?
I'm not, because all I'm hearing is the yelling of the crowd right now, but I did hear your question. And one of the scenarios that has obviously been bandied about in political circles in Washington is that the Chief Justice may well, though he be conservative, decide to join a broader majority and write a majority opinion upholding this law, that it was conceivable based on what he had said were his priorities for the court in his confirmation hearing, that he wanted to paper over some of the perceptions of partisanship and division on the court, that he believed fundamentally in upholding laws that Congress, as an arm of the public in the republic, had passed. He would overturn them if necessary, of course. So that gave people some signals that, hey, gee, maybe John Roberts is looking at an opening here as Chief Justice to not only rule on this case but position the court in a less partisan way for the long term. Now, I'm
well,
not inside his head,
so,
and I can't tell you that's what he's done, but that was one of the scenarios that was conceived up here.
Yes, though so far, in the eyes of most liberals, he had not done that very much at all as Chief Justice, Citizens United, and a number of other things. But Professor Sperrer, here's the breakdown. We now have it. The dissenting justices were Scalia, Thomas, Alito, and Kennedy. So it is, in fact, the case that Chief Justice Roberts voted with the liberals on the court, and the perennial swing voter, Justice Kennedy, did not.
That indeed is a surprise. I mean, I when I was talking yesterday with colleagues of mine and trying to issue my own prediction, I had predicted a 6-3 upholding of the law, but I thought that Kennedy would be the swing vote and Roberts would then join Kennedy in making a 6-3 majority. I did not anticipate, and I think very few people anticipated, Kennedy voting no and Roberts swing vote yes.
That 6-3 scenario is one that a lot of people have talked about as kind of political, that if it was going to go 5-4 anyway to uphold the law because Kennedy was going to vote to uphold it,
right,
then Justice Roberts didn't want to look like he had lost his court and so would go and vote with the majority and get out in front of the parade, consolidating his power for the future. However, we see now that it did not happen that way.
Right.
On the other piece of the ruling, and this is a more complicated piece, but the way that SCOTUS blog is telling it right now, the entire ACA, Affordable Care Act, is upheld with the exception that the federal government's power to terminate states' Medicaid funds is narrowly read. All right, so now I'm going to go to your expertise as a health policy and management professor to put that into plain English. With the exception that the federal government's power to terminate states' Medicaid funds is narrowly read. On first blush, what do you make of that?
Sure, well, that's extraordinarily interesting. And it's especially interesting because the Medicaid expansion that Congress enacted and the president signed was considered by most experts to be a much safer bet for full upholding than was the individual mandate. In fact, none of the lower courts struck down the Medicaid mandate, where obviously the 11th Circuit had struck down the individual mandate. Medicaid is a federal-state program. It's a health insurance program for low-income populations here in the United States that is financed jointly by the federal government and the states. The feds pay about 57% of the bill, and the states pay about 43% of the bill. The federal government sets general rules governing the Medicaid program, and one of the key provisions of the Affordable Care Act was the federal government said to significantly expand coverage for the uninsured, we're going to require the states to significantly expand their Medicaid programs, adding probably 18 to 20 million Americans to the Medicaid rolls as of 2014 when that provision takes effect. Typically, when the federal government issues a ruling, says to the states, under the Medicaid program, you have to expand coverage, the states say, all right, what's the penalty if we don't do that? And under Medicaid, the historic penalty for failure to comply with the federal rule has been complete termination of the federal funding. Clearly here the federal government is saying, and I'd have to read the decision to get the details.
The court is saying
that somehow or another, if the states choose not to comply, it sounds like not to comply with the expansion component of the Affordable Care Act, the Medicaid mm-hmm. expansion component of the Affordable Care Act, the federal government's power to penalize the states is limited.
They cannot penalize the states by terminating the state's Medicaid funds that they get from the federal government.
Right.
In fact, part of this expansion, as I understand it, is kind of what I've been calling a teaser rate. The federal government will pay 90%, correct
right.
me if I'm wrong, of the new burden on the states to put more people on the Medicaid rolls, but they will only pay that 90% for a limited number of years, and then the states are more on their own. Is that your understanding?
Well, actually, the teaser rate is even higher than you suggest. From 2014 to 2016, the federal government will pay 100% of that cost. It then goes down to 95% in 2017 and then phases down to 90% after that. I think the states, so you might say, what's the state's beef here? The federal government is paying 90 to 100% of the cost of this expansion. But the state says, first of all, we are being the state's argument was that we were being unduly coerced into accepting this expansion, even if we think the expansion's a bad idea, and the penalty would have been we would lose all of our Medicaid dollars. Clearly that can't happen now under this ruling.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, the United States Supreme Court has just upheld the Affordable Care Act, known to its opponents as Obamacare. Most significantly, they have upheld the individual mandate, that is, the right of the government to require all Americans to purchase health insurance if they're not otherwise covered, like at work or under a government program. Apparently, they upheld it under what's known as Section 5000A, which is related to the government's ability to impose a tax. The majority decision says Section 5000A need not be read to do more than impose a tax. This is sufficient to sustain it. So my initial interpretation from what I've read previously is that, that section is actually the individual mandate part of the law, and that under the taxing power of the Constitution, they are able to impose a tax on people who refuse to buy health insurance, and so that it can be read that way, right, which is constitutional, rather than read as a requirement to buy a product, which would have been opened the door to allowing the government to force us to buy broccoli, as this right. famous example, right. and cars and so forth. Now, Todd Zwillick, the Takeaways Washington correspondent, let me go back to you on the steps of the Supreme Court in your context as a political reporter. In the context of the political campaign, do you think this is unambiguously good for the president's reelection chances?
Well, I don't think there's any question that this is the preferable outcome for the president's reelection chances. There were lots of arguments to be made that if the individual mandate were struck down, that the president's base, the left, would be energized to say, we need to reelect the president because we have to solve this problem, even if the Supreme Court isn't going to play along. They don't have that argument now, but look, really what this is a reaffirmation, a huge affirmation by a conservative court of the president's first year domestic agenda. This was the banner marquee issue of his domestic agenda. This court generally, and I'm speaking in general terms, is not on his side. And the White House, I think, will come back at this and cast this as a consensus moment. Not that, you know, healthcare is controversial, it's complicated, but imagine the complication if the president's agenda had been unraveled by the Supreme Court after all of that political capital, after all of that energy, after all of that arm twisting and bad press that went on in the president's first term about the Affordable Care Act. Mitt Romney himself cast this earlier this week, Brian, and I know that you heard this, saying if the Supreme Court strikes down significant parts of Obamacare, the president's first term will have been wasted. Now, Mitt Romney and his base will certainly have a strong argument to go ahead with repeal. You'll hear him say that regardless of what the court says, this law is bad policy and needs to be repealed, and he has an even stronger case for that now, and Republicans in the House will repeat that message within the next few minutes here, I'm positive. But the idea that the president squandered his first term on a quixotic fool's errand of an unconstitutional mandate is now out the window. Mitt Romney has other arguments, but he's going to have to go to those other arguments. The president will not have to contend with the accusation that he wasted everyone's time and can say, you don't have to like it. Lots of people do like it, but we have made significant strides to solve one of the biggest social policy problems, probably the biggest, aside from poverty, social policy problems that this country faces.
Todd, just give me 30 seconds before you go on the scene right now on the steps of the Supreme Court.
The scene right now is crowded. I'm looking over at what appears to be sort of the Tea Party section, and I say that because I see Don't Tread on Me flags over there. They're not cheering anymore, Brian, although there have been people on megaphones saying that this is not a unified decision for Obamacare. Some pro-Obama supporters came and stood in front of the cameras with their cardboard placards cheering for Obamacare and for President Obama, as you can imagine. And some people in the back are starting to, well, people aren't filtering away. In fact, there are more people here than there were when we started the broadcast. So there's still plenty of crowd. There's still plenty of crush. And I'm going to stand here and wait for the litigants and the lawyers and the advocates to come out and make their statements in front of the mic.
Good. We'll talk to you later. The Takeaways Washington correspondent, Todd Zwillick. Again, the headline, the Supreme Court has upheld 5-4 with Chief Justice Roberts joining the left of the court, that the Affordable Care Act is almost entirely constitutional and stands. Our coverage continues. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
Uh-huh.
I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Well, there's a good example, and I'm pretty confident that this court will recognize that and not take that step.
And the president's confidence expressed there after the oral arguments in the spring has been validated. If you're just joining us, the Supreme Court has voted 5-4 to uphold almost the entirety of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Most significantly, the individual mandate to buy insurance or pay a tax has been upheld. In a more limited affirmation of the law, they also upheld the Medicaid expansion. 26 states had sued the federal government, saying that that was an unfair and unconstitutional imposition by Washington on the states. They did uphold that a little bit more narrowly. As the website SCOTUS blog puts it, the key comment on salvaging the Medicaid expansion was this from Chief Justice Roberts, who was part of the majority on this. "Nothing in our opinion precludes Congress from offering funds under the ACA to expand the availability of health care, that is, more Medicaid funds to the states, and requiring that states accept such funds comply with the conditions of their use. What Congress is not free to do is penalize states that choose not to participate in that new program by taking away their existing Medicaid funding." So, in other words, the federal government can offer incentives to the states to join this expansion of Medicaid, but they can't punish the states that, and there may be some conservative states that refuse to join the expansion of Medicaid. They can't punish those states by taking away their existing Medicaid funding. That part was struck down. Michael Sperrer is with us, the chair of the Health Policy and Management Department at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. And also joining us now is Ovik Roy, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, the conservative think tank. He also writes the Apothecary blog on healthcare policy for Forbes magazine. Ovik, thank you very much for coming on today. Are you shocked?
I'm pretty surprised, but, you know, the Supreme Court always does things that are interesting. So we'll have to see when we actually have a chance to read the opinion, what the details are. But definitely something that I think a lot of people weren't expecting.
Is it your understanding that this was upheld on the basis of the power of the federal government to tax under the Constitution? Because that's my first impression from what I'm seeing. So the so-called broccoli argument is irrelevant according to this ruling. Again, this is on first impression, but this is the way it looks to me from what I'm seeing on the wires and some of the blogs, that they are not setting a precedent that the federal government can force Americans to buy this product or that product. What they're saying is because there's a penalty associated with this, which is to pay a tax if you don't buy insurance under the individual mandate, that it's validated by the taxing provision of the Constitution. Do you have that impression yet?
Yeah, that's I'm reading the same reports that you are, and it's very interesting because most of the lower courts really poo-pooed the argument that the individual mandate was a tax for a number of structural reasons in the legislative history, the way it's described in the law. And in fact, at oral argument as well, you know, there was one day where the Solicitor General argued that the mandate was a tax, and another day when he argued it was a penalty because of the various different things that were being argued in the court. So it's something that you know, because it was something that most judges did not, even liberal judges agreed wasn't a tax. It's interesting that Roberts sided with the liberal bloc on that particular point.
By the way, I want to mention to everybody something that happened on CNN within the hour, and this is not to take any glee in the mistake of another news organization. Just I mention it because there's some confusion out there that's been sowed by this, and people are commenting on our site. CNN initially reported when this decision was released that the mandate was struck down.
Wow.
Now, it's a breaking news situation. There was a race to get information out there. But if you're seeing tweets or any other ripple effect out in the Twitter sphere or on Facebook or wherever you are, you know, these ripple effects from CNN's initial reports, know that they are wrong, and CNN has issued a correction. So again, not to take any glee in another news organization's mistake in trying to report something that's fast-breaking and maybe confusing at first blush, there was that CNN error in first reporting that the law was struck down, and so a lot of people have retweeted that, and people are reacting with disappointment if they supported the law, or happiness if they opposed the law in some places online. So here's one additional corrective that was wrong. The law was upheld. The individual mandate, Ovik Roy, was originally a conservative market-based idea. Make individuals feel the pain and they'll stop using unnecessary care and they'll force prices down. Did the right abandon this only because Obama adopted it?
Yeah, I would disagree with the premise of the question. There was the Heritage Foundation and some Republican politicians in Congress who supported the individual mandate, but the vast majority of conservative health wonks actually opposed it in the early 90s and since. So there's been an energetic debate about that on the right in terms of, the fact that the Heritage Foundation has gotten a lot of flack from other conservatives for having supported the mandate. But it wasn't something that, and there's also a difference between a state mandate and a federal mandate, right? So that's part of the discussion today as well, because nobody's challenging that, say, an individual mandate in Massachusetts is constitutional because states have the right to do what they want. But at the federal level, it's a different matter. And obviously today what's happened is the court has interpreted it as a tax, which is a whole other set of constitutional arguments, because the arguments that we were all talking about the last time I was on your show were around the Commerce Clause. And so this is a completely different set of considerations constitutionally if you think the mandate is a tax.
Right. And I wonder what you think fellow conservatives will do now. Of course, if there's a Republican Congress that's elected, and especially if Mitt Romney is also elected, I guess Supreme Court and constitutionality questions aside, politics will come into play, and there would still be an attempt to repeal much or all of Obamacare, right?
I think there's certainly, I think Governor Romney will campaign on that basis, and if Republicans do get the majority in the Senate, they will attempt to repeal the law via reconciliation.
Here's one line, Professor Scarra, that I'm seeing in some of the coverage that I don't understand yet. And again, listeners, remember, this is all coming out right now. Mistakes will be made, not just by CNN. So one thing that I'm seeing that I don't understand is a post on SCOTUS blog that says the court reinforces that individuals can simply refuse to pay the tax and not comply with the mandate. Do you understand what that might mean?
Well, there is, when the law was passed, it included, as you say, this minimum coverage or individual mandate requirement. It also included some exemptions. There were some exemptions to the individual mandate. And there were exemptions, for example, if you had a religious objection to the mandate, if you had a financial hardship, and if the cost of coverage for you exceeded 8% of your income, and so forth. So I don't want to be one of the like CNN here and make a mistake here. So I'm not exactly sure what the court has in mind there, but it could be saying that even under the mandate, it was not a 100% lock, stock, and barrel mandate. There were provisions in the mandate to allow people to not comply if they can suggest and show that they had some sort of religious objection.
Any thought about this? Have you seen something similar, Ovik, and do you understand it?
The reason why the tax argument hadn't been used even by the administration in litigation was that there were concerns that because the tax wasn't applied uniformly, to your other guest's point, there's certain elements, provisions in the Constitution about taxing having to be uniform, and so the fact that certain people based on income were exempted from this tax and for other various considerations made it something that where the taxing second power of the Constitution wasn't the best route to justify it. And, you know, there was all this, this debate as the law was being passed. There was a classic moment where George Stephanopoulos interviewed the president and said, well, you know, you promised not to raise taxes on the middle class, but isn't the individual mandate a tax? And President Obama said, no, I completely reject the notion that this is a tax. It's not a tax. And yet it's kind of ironic that that's going to be the source of his victory today.
Again, listeners, if you're just joining us, the Supreme Court has upheld almost the entirety of the president's Affordable Care Act. The individual mandate stands. The ability to expand Medicaid to cover additional people mostly stands, though the feds cannot threaten the states with taking away their existing Medicaid funding if states choose not to participate in the expansion. On this tax question, Ovik, along similar but kind of opposite lines, I read that the law could face an additional legal challenge based on the idea of an unauthorized tax. Apparently, the IRS is drawing up tax penalties of $3,000 per worker for employers who don't cover their workers. If it was a fine, it might be fine, but because the IRS would be the collector, it could be unconstitutional because Congress did not explicitly write this as a tax law somebody may bring to court. Are you familiar with that scenario and that argument?
Yeah, it's without boring your readers with all the technical details. There's an element. You know, the law requires all employers to sponsor all employers with work more than 50 workers to sponsor health insurance for their workers, and due to a number of things were drafting errors in the law. The way it works is, you know, every state has to set up these subsidized exchanges for private health insurance. But if the states don't set up the exchanges according to law, the federal government can step in and run those exchanges itself. The problem is because of this drafting error in the law, a federally run exchange isn't eligible for subsidies in the way the state run exchanges are. And so that in turn unwinds the employer mandate, because if a state decides we don't want to set up an exchange, then and the federal government tries to set up an exchange instead, that federal exchange can't take advantage of the subsidies in the law, the employer mandate doesn't apply, because the employer mandate only kicks in if some of your workers are taking advantage of those subsidies. But the IRS, the Department of Treasury, has ruled that federal exchanges can get subsidies. And so this challenge that you're talking about is some challengers are saying, well, you know, the IRS can't make that decision because that's not specified in the law.
And Professor Sperr, some critics of the law say even if it's upheld as constitutional, which it has now been, the individual mandate in particular, that it won't sweep as many people into the insurance pool as supporters hope, because the tax is too small. Mm-hmm. And so many people may still look at their options, especially if they're young and healthy, and say, well, I don't want to spend thousands of dollars on a health insurance policy, so I'll have to pay this tax. But the tax doesn't nearly equate to what the cost of a policy would be, so they'll just stay out of it anyway and pay the tax, and maybe not that many more people will choose to buy insurance as do today.
Absolutely. That's a concern that a lot of folks have. I think, as you point out, the individual mandate basically says to all Americans, with the exceptions that we talked about a minute ago, you have to have coverage, either public or private, by 2014 or pay a penalty on your taxes. The first year that takes effect is 2014. That year, the penalty on an individual is $95, and it can go up to $285 for a family. The next year, it can go up to, you know, it goes up a little bit. And by 2016, when it's fully in place, the tax/penalty is $695 per person, up to $2,085 per family, or 2.5% of household income. And clearly, as you point out, even when we get beyond the first year and the $95, even when we're up to $695 per person, that's a lot less than the cost of an individual insurance plan. And so, you know, the debate here is whether or not the individual mandate and the force of law, in effect, saying it's the law that you should have health insurance or pay this penalty, will that be enough to persuade particularly young adults? And that's who the mandate is really designed to encourage/require. Will it be enough to encourage young adults, to require young adults to obtain health insurance, or will young adults choose to opt out, pay the penalty, And if they opt out, the concern is that insurance companies, which also under the law are required to accept anybody who applies now and to basically not to sort of charge higher rates to the sick based on pre-existing conditions, the concern is that the insurance companies will be faced with a sicker and sicker risk pool.
And sure enough, as I suspected, clarifications are starting to come in now on this idea that people can refuse to pay the tax. It now appears that the ruling does uphold that you have to pay a penalty or a tax if you refuse to mandate. We're continuing to figure out why there's some confusion on this, and we'll keep reporting this out. But frankly, I would be very surprised if the Supreme Court gave individuals the ability to simply refuse to pay a tax that's enacted in law by the Congress of the United States without paying any penalty.
A blanket exemption would be, I think, unfathomable at this point.
And Ovik Roy, what about your impression on how many people actually will be swept up into the insurance pool, especially young adults, rather than choose to pay that tax, which, as Professor Sperrer just explained, is quite low relative to the cost of an insurance policy?
Well, I think Professor Sperrer is exactly right, and this has been an underappreciated aspect of this debate, that the individual mandate that contained in the law is actually fairly weak when you combine that with all the other things that drive up the cost of health care for young people. So one of the provisions in the law is community rating. Now, in New York, we already have community rating, but a lot of states don't. And what community rating does is it forces young people to pay more for their health insurance in order to subsidize the health insurance for the middle-aged. And so what that means is if you're young and healthy and you have to choose between paying $695 in this now tax or paying $5,000, say, for health insurance that you won't use because a 25-year-old, say, doesn't really go to the doctor that much, the person might decide, you know what, I'll just pay the tax.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we are following the release of the Supreme Court's ruling on the Obama health care law. They have upheld the law. They have upheld the individual mandate. They have upheld the right of the federal government to expand the Medicaid program to get in people with up to a third higher than the poverty level. That would be a lot more Americans on Medicaid. The only thing they struck down was the right of the federal government to withhold Medicaid funding from states that decide not to participate in the expansion. So there's going to be another issue, and we'll discuss this as we go, of state-by-state politics in this. Who knows what Chris Christie will do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And be patient, listeners. I know a lot of you want to sound off on this, and as our coverage continues, we will open up the phones. We're trying to get the information out first and give you a grounding in what's actually happening here. And then we certainly will take a lot of your calls and comments as we go. Our website is certainly open for your comments right now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Some that are coming in already, mostly from fans of the law. John A. writes, I feel the hope flowing back into my body after months of dread. The Truth from Becky writes, good news, reelect President Obama. Catherine from Brooklyn, upheld. Just outstanding. What is good for our seniors is good for all, I guess, meaning that there's Medicare, and that's, of course, government insurance, which is different from this system. But listeners, pro, con, mixed, other, go to our webpage, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, and have the conversation. Also, if you follow us on Twitter, we just tweeted a link to the actual opinion. It's almost 70 pages. So at Brian Lehr on Twitter, you can get to the link with the actual opinion. I want to thank Michael Sperrer, the chair of the Health Policy Management at Columbia University. And I want to thank Ovik Roy, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He also writes the Apothecary blog on healthcare policy for Forbes magazine, for joining us. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. Our coverage continues.